This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Healthcare is big business in this country. Even if you're fortunate enough to have good insurance, getting your needs met can be difficult. Insurance companies decide what gets covered and what doesn't, and they are not accountable to the public. So the red tape of dealing with healthcare providers can be exhausting. And the people who deliver healthcare are caught up in the same system. So providing health care that delivers good outcomes can be a challenge. Dr. Ralph Snyderman wondered what it would take to provide better health care. He spent 15 years as Chancellor for Health Affairs and Dean of the School of Medicine at Duke University, but he found his answer in the most unexpected place, a meeting with the Dalai Lama. Not surprisingly, the Dalai Lama pointed to compassion as the missing ingredient. Ralph Snyderman shares his story in a recent publication entitled Compassion and Healthcare, a discussion with the Dalai Lama. And Dr. Ralph Snyderman joins us now. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I want to find out more about what was said and now your thoughts in sort of how we bring compassion back to this business. But how comes it that you are talking with the Dalai Lama about this in the first place?
Well, as the previous head of the Duke University Health System, I saw firsthand over a period of 15 years the type of health care that was being delivered in the United States. Health care over that period of time, and has continued since, has been increasingly driven by major advances in health care technologies. What I have seen, however, is that in many ways, we have become servants of that technology, and what has driven physicians and other providers into healthcare, compassion, the desire to help other people, is expunged by the technology and the bureaucracy surrounding it. My feeling was that the lack of compassion between the physician and the patient was an ingredient that was missing, and not only did it lead to less satisfaction on the part of the physician or the provider and the patient, it also led to less optimal outcomes. Given the thought that compassion is something that is obviously an integral component of healthcare, I thought, what would be better than to speak to the world's living authority on compassion, the Dalai Lama. So I made a decision just a little bit over a year ago that I would do everything that I could to engage with him in a conversation about compassion and healthcare.
So you did. Talk about the meeting and how it unfolded.
Well, the meeting occurred a little bit over a year ago in Dharamshala, India, which is the residence and actually the government in exile of Tibet in India. I had met the Dalai Lama at a very large meeting in 2005, an organization that he helped found called the Mind Life Institute that brings together the leading theoreticians and practitioners of Buddhism with the leading scientists in Western civilization to see what the two entities could learn from each other, Buddhism and Western science. At this meeting, which was trying to understand the human mind and consciousness, at the end of the meeting, Constitution Hall in Washington, in front of over 5,000 people, I was asked to have a conversation with His Holiness about what was learned at that meeting. So we met on stage at that time. I must say, getting to meet him again required a little bit of a technical word called chutzpah. Chutzpah was...
Not a Buddhist word either,
not a
I don't
Buddhist
think.
Word. Oh. I'm not sure exactly the derivation. I have some suspicions. But at any rate, I used all my friends who knew the Dalai Lama well, indicated the topic, finally made contact with his secretary. We had some communication. I had to keep on pestering him. And he said, well, if you're there on this particular day, we will give you 5 or 10 minutes with His Holiness. It was a little bit kind of vague, but we decided to be there. We were there. and that what unfolded was a much longer interview that lasted well over an hour.
See, a lot better. He's going to give you 15 minutes. That's your visit. Then it's up. And then it turns out he's going to spend a little more time with you.
Correct.
Now, what'd you talk about?
Well, we talked about his favorite topic, compassion. And just to give you a little bit of flavor, the site in Dharamshala is surrounded with people, teeming with people. When we went for our visit, we were told that we would be with him exactly at 10:10. I presume from 10:10 to 10:20 in the morning. We were sitting in a room with 50 other Buddhist lamas, I presume, wearing saffron robes and stuff. And every once in a while, they'd pull people out, and they would disappear, and then new people would come in. When we finally were pulled out, it was immediately after a whole delegation of the Indian Parliament were there to see him. We were brought into a room. We were surprised in that there was the Dalai Lama's chair, which is just a large office chair, and then two other chairs right next to it. We thought that there might be 50 people in the room. At any rate, it turned out to be myself, my wife, Renee, who was with me, the Dalai Lama, who once we met, he took a hold of my right hand, did not let it go for the entire meeting. He held my hand for the entire meeting. Mm-hmm. We sat right next to each other. His Holiness has a way of being totally engaged with whoever he is with. So he is looking at you intensely, directly in your eyes. He positions his head a little bit lower than yours so that there is a feeling that he is looking up to you, which gives a sense of total comfort with this individual. He is absolutely engaged. And he started talking about compassion is the source of joy to the individual who receives the compassion, and it is the only true source of happiness to the person who gives compassion. So that the essential human element, what is necessary for survival, particularly now that we have the capability of destroying civilization very easily, that the main ingredient for human survival and happiness is compassion. So why are we not focusing on this? Why are we not educating children about this? It is so totally the root of all humanity, all happiness, all survivability, and yet we are taking it for granted.
You come back from this meeting now, fortified in your conviction, and I suspect that you went in with some conviction that compassion played a role in this, fortified in a conviction that that compassion is perhaps what's missing in our medical service and delivery at the moment and needs to be put back. And you have no less an authority than His Holiness to back you up. Now what do you do?
Well, an interesting thing, Frank, is during this conversation, which I had no reason to expect would take so long and get so deep, I would say about 50 minutes into this conversation, when we were very, very intense, and His Holiness was much closer to me than you and I are right now. We were a foot and a half apart. My wife was sitting next to us. And I was so engaged with His Holiness, quite frankly, I was not thinking about her. And she popped up and she said, excuse me a moment, I have an important idea. And His Holiness was gazing at me. He slowly turned to her and he said, yes, madam. She said, this is such a rich conversation. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the two of you wrote a manuscript for an influential medical journal that described your conversation today? He did not bat an eye. He did not wait a millisecond. He said, that is our obligation, madam. And when we left, we walked out with his secretary, And I started thinking that, gee, this is something that I think that I just got a task laid before me by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I must say, honestly, for 3 or 4 months, I couldn't see how this ever was going to happen. I didn't know what I would do. Fortunately, I took extensive notes of the interview immediately afterwards, and lo and behold, I wrote a manuscript. I sent it to Dharamshala for His Holiness to review. It was sent to his secretary. I got it back with very few comments, but there were comments, so I made those changes. To my knowledge, His Holiness has never written a co-authored manuscript for a medical journal. I submitted it to the official journal of the Association of American Medical Colleges. Now, I've been in this profession for over 45 years. I've written 400 manuscripts. I submitted this online, I think, let's say 12:30 p.m. I got back an approval within an hour from the editor himself. I've never seen such a thing in my life. So the first step is getting this paper out. The next is I am deeply committed to doing everything that I can to raise the awareness that compassion should not be an afterthought, an assumption that this is something that will exist. It should be front of mind. There should be the mental discipline involved in understanding the importance of compassion. And it should be much more upfront in the consideration of being a core competency of every medical student and every physician in practice.
Here's the challenge. There's no money in that. The medical industry is designed to make money. The pharmaceutical industry is designed to make money. Luckily for us, that often correlates, but not always, and as we've seen with medical health delivery, not enough, it often correlates with our better health. When it doesn't, money wins. Compassion doesn't make money. It's not that doctors have forgotten to be compassionate, would you say? It's that they're working within a system that has a 15-minute visit and a patient that requires 90 minutes to 2 hours of listening. What do we do about that?
Well, unfortunately, I agree with you, I have been appalled by the degree in which the practice of medicine has followed the money. And I don't think it is the physicians per se. It is the large provider systems and the large insurers that are driving this issue. And I don't think it's out of intended malevolence. It is a system that we have become caught up in. I see changes. Believe me, I've been in this for a while, and I would say in the last few years, I'm seeing changes. Physicians, providers understand that burnout is a major medical problem. It is a substantial problem. It's recognized. We are starting to deal with it. We understand that even if you follow the money, our country is spending almost $3.5 trillion, more than two-thirds of which is for the treatment of preventable chronic disease. I believe that one of the reasons for this is the lack of engagement between physician and the patient to allow the patient to understand and really buy into the behavioral changes that are necessary for them to be able to combat their own disease. So I think even if you follow the money, it's obvious that we have a failing system the way we're doing it now. Physicians and providers are becoming more intent in getting back to the fact that we really are in a profession. This is a profession. It's not a job. It is a profession. It is a gift to be able to practice medicine, that we ought to be able to do it in the way that we believe is right. Right now, it's a little bit like David and Goliath in terms of overcoming the system. But I think the system is changing in terms of reimbursement for value rather than for the number of services performed. And the fact that physicians are getting fed up, the leaders of medicine are getting fed up, And I think we will start seeing change.
So to what extent do you think physicians and other practitioners, medical practitioners, nurses, nurse practitioners, PAs, that they should become advocates and activists for change in a system that, as you say, is the Goliath that is, for however it got here and whatever the intention was, is really getting in the way of good outcomes?
I think that physicians and providers, because we know now providers are a team. So I think providers, those of us who have come into the practice driven by compassion when we started, that have seen the difficulty of continuing to practice this way and seeing the flaws within the system, have to be vocal advocates for many, many reasons. One, to protect our ability to practice and enjoy the practice of medicine, because it is no fun being with a patient knowing that you need to fill out many, many different kinds of forms. Either you do it now or you do it after you get done in the evening, just to be able to comply with the various regulations. And it's not good medicine. I see it occurring on the parts of deans of medical education that are saying we need to go back and have core competency and compassion being core competency number one. We need to have more capabilities of teaching this to medical students. And one of the things that I have learned to a degree following the visit with the Dalai Lama is the importance and the rapidity by which a physician could get into the compassionate mode just by being mindful and indicating to themselves, I want to engage with this patient in front of me now. I have the blessing and the privilege to be a physician for this patient. I will not take this moment for granted. So while I am here now, I am going to be engaged with this individual. That is the door that opens the physician to compassion.
It's a door, but if he's working, he and she are working in a system that doesn't allow for that time, or even if that moment is a much more engaged moment and it requires more, that system doesn't change. It's not about individuals bringing their compassion to it. And right now, I think practitioners are having to check their compassion in a blind trust until they finish their day.
Well, I think it's going to be a multimodal approach. One of the approaches is to change the system that it understands the value and the need for compassion, even on a business basis, if not on a moral basis. I totally agree. I think we need to continue to advocate for medical reimbursement to be based on value rather than frequency of performance. I think the public would be benefited so much if they understood more about what they are paying for and the power that they have in the ballot box to do sane things, to vote for people who understand the importance of health care based on the value it delivers to the individual. I think the profession needs to rise up, as you said, and be an advocate for the profession and an advocate for the patient. And as long as I can continue to be that advocate, I will keep on doing it.
Dr. Ralph Snyderman, director of the Duke Center for Personalized Healthcare, had many other professions and positions at Duke as well, and recently wrote that article, Compassion and Healthcare, A Discussion with the Dalai Lama. And you can find links to our website, stateofthings.org. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Coming up, the blues of Harvey Dalton Arnold. Stay with us.